Chapter 28 Carnifex. I woke the next morning in a lazaret, a long, high-ceilinged room where we the sick, the injured, lay upon narrow beds. I was naked, and for a long time, while sleep, or perhaps it was death, tugged at my eyelids, I moved my hands slowly over my body, searching it for injuries, while I wondered, as I might have wondered of someone in a song, how I would live without clothing or money, how I should explain to Master Palaemon the loss of the sword and cloak he had given me. For I was sure they were lost, or rather, that I was myself in some way lost from them. An ape, with the head of a dog, ran down the aisle, paused at my bed to look at me, then ran on. That seemed no stranger to me than the light that, passing through a window I could not see, fell upon my blanket. I woke again and sat up. For a moment I truly thought I was in our dormitory again, that I was captain of apprentices, that everything else, my masking, the death of Thecla, the combat of the Averns, had been only a dream. This was not the last time this was to happen. Then I saw that the ceiling was of plaster, and not our familiar metal one, and that the man in the bed next to my own was swathed in bandages. I threw back the blanket and swung my feet to the floor. Dorcas sat, asleep, with her back to the wall at the head of my bed. She had wrapped herself in the brown mantle. Terminus est lay across her lap, the hilt and scabbard tip protruding from either side of my heaped belongings. I managed to get my boots and hose, my breeches, my cloak, and my belt with its saber tash without waking her, but when I tried to take my sword, she murmured and clung to it. So I left it with her. Many of the sick were awake and stared at me, but none spoke. A door at the end of the room opened onto a flight of steps, and these descended to a courtyard where destriers stamped. For a moment I thought I was dreaming still. The cynocephalus was climbing up the crenellations of the wall. But it was an animal as real as the champing steeds, and when I threw a bit of rubbish at it, it bared teeth as impressive as triskels. A trooper in a hauberk came out to get something from his saddlebag, and I stopped him and asked where I was. He supposed that I meant in what part of the fortress, and pointed at a turret behind which he said was the Hall of Justice, then told me that if I would come with him, I could probably get something to eat. As soon as he spoke, I realized I was famished. I followed him down a dark hallway, into a room much lower and darker than the lazaret, where 2 or 3 score demarchi, like himself, were bent over a midday meal of fresh bread, beef, and boiled greens. My new friend advised me to take a plate and tell the cooks I had been instructed to come here for my dinner. I did so, and though they looked a trifle surprised at my Fuligian cloak, they served me without objection. If the cooks were incurious, the soldiers were curiosity itself. They asked my name and where I came from and what my rank was, for they assumed our guild was organized like the military. They asked where my axe was, and when I told them we used the sword, where that was. And when I explained that I had a woman with me who was watching it, they cautioned me that she might run away with it, and then counseled me to carry out bread for her under my cloak, since she would not be permitted to come where we were to eat. I discovered that all the older men had supported women, camp followers of what is perhaps the most useful and least dangerous kind, at one time or another, though few had them now. They had spent the summer before in fighting in the north, and had been sent to winter in Nessus, where they served to maintain order. Now they expected to go north again within a week. Their women had returned to their own villages to live with parents or relatives, I asked if the women would not have preferred to follow them south.
"Prefer it," said my friend.
"Of course they'd prefer it.
But how would they do it?
It's one thing to follow cavalry that's fighting its way north with army, for that doesn't make more than a league or two on the best days, and if it clears three in a week, you can bet it will lose two the next.
But how would they keep up on the way back to the city? 15 leagues a day? And what would they eat on the way?
It's better for them to wait.
If a new Xenogy comes to our old sector, they'll have some new men. Some new girls will come too, and some of the old ones drop out, and it gives everyone a chance to change off if they want.
I heard they brought in one of you Carnifexes last night, but he was nearly dead himself. Have you been to see him?
I said I had not.
One of our patrols reported him, and when the Kiliarch heard of it, he sent them back to bring him, seeing we were sure to need one in a day or so. They swear they didn't touch him, but they had to bring him back on a litter. I don't know if he's one of your comrades, but you might want to take a look.
I promised I would, and after thanking the soldiers for their hospitality, left them. I was worried about Dorcas, and their questioning, though was clearly well-meant, had made me uneasy. There were too many things I could not explain. How I had come to be injured, for example, if I had admitted I was the man who had been carried in the night before. And where Dorcas had come from. Not really understanding those things myself bothered me at least as much, and I felt, as we always feel when there is a whole sector of our lives that cannot bear light, that no matter how far the last question had been from one of the forbidden subjects, the next would pierce to the heart of it. Dorcas was awake and standing by my bed, where someone had left a cup of steaming broth. She was so delighted to see me that I felt happy myself, as though joy were as contagious as a pestilence.
"I thought you were dead," she told me. "You were gone and your clothes were gone, and I thought they had taken them to bury you in."
"I'm all right," I said. "What happened last night?" Dorcas became serious at once. I made her sit on the bed with me and eat the bread I had brought and drink the broth while she answered.
"You remember fighting with the man who wore that strange helmet, I'm sure. You put on a mask and went into the arena with him, although I begged you not to. Almost at once he hit you in the chest and you fell. I remember seeing the leaf. A horrible thing like a flatworm made of iron, half in your body and turning red as it drank your blood. Then it fell away. I don't know how to describe it. It was as though everything I had seen had been wrong. But it wasn't wrong. I remember what I saw. You got up again, and you looked, I don't know, as if you were lost or some part of you was far away. I thought he was going to kill you at once, but the Air Force protected you, saying he had to allow you to get your Avern. His was quiet, the way yours had been when you pulled it up in that awful place, but yours had begun to writhe and open its flower. I thought it had been open before, the white thing with the swirl of petals, only now I believe I was thinking too much of roses, and it had not been open at all. There was something underneath, something else. A face, like the face poison would have if poison had a face. You didn't notice. You picked it up and it began to curl toward you, slowly as though it were only half awake. But the other man, the Hipparch, couldn't believe what he had seen. He was staring at you. And that woman, Adja, was shouting to him. And all at once he turned and ran away.
The people who were watching didn't want him to.
They wanted to see someone killed, so they tried to stop him, and he...
Her eyes were brimming with tears. She turned her head to keep me from seeing them. I said, "He struck several of them with his Avern, and I suppose killed them." "Then what happened?"
"It wasn't just that he struck them. It struck at them, after the first two, like a snake. The ones who were cut with the leaves didn't die at once. They screamed, and some of them ran and fell and got up and ran again, as if they were blind, knocking other people down. And at last, a big man struck him from behind, and a woman who had been fighting somewhere else came with a Brachomar. She cut the Avern, not sidewise, but down the stem so it split. Then some of the men held the Hipparch, and I heard her blade clash on his helmet. You were just standing there. I wasn't sure you even knew he was gone, and your Avern was bending back toward your face. I thought of what the woman had done and hit at it with your sword. It was heavy, so very heavy at first, and then it was hardly heavy at all. But when I slashed down with it, I felt as if I could have struck the head from a bison. Only I had forgotten to take off the sheath. But it knocked the Avern out of your hand, and I took you and led you away."
"Where?"
I asked.
She shivered and dipped a piece of bread in the steaming broth.
"I don't know. I didn't care. It was just so good to be walking with you, to know I was taking care of you the way you had taken care of me before we got the Avern. But I was cold, terribly cold, when night came. I put your cloak all around you and fastened it in front, and you didn't seem to be cold, so I took this mantle and wrapped myself in it. My dress was falling to pieces. It still is."
I said, "I wanted to buy you another one when we were at the inn."
She shook her head, chewing the tough crust. "Do you know, I think this is the first food I've had in a long, long time. I have pains in my stomach. That's why I drank the wine there. But this makes it feel better. I hadn't realized how weak I was getting. But I didn't want a new dress from there, because I would have had to wear it for a long time, and it would always have reminded me of that day. You can buy me a dress now if you like, because it will remind me of this day, when I thought you were dead, when you were really well." Anyway, we got back into the city somehow. I was hoping to find a place to stop where you could lie down, but there were only big houses with terraces and balustrades, that sort of thing. Some soldiers came galloping up and asked if you were a Carnifex. I didn't know the word, but I remembered what you had told me, and so I told them you were a torturer, because soldiers have always seemed to me to be a kind of torturer, and I knew they would help us. They tried to get you to ride, but you fell off. So some of them tied their capes between two lances and laid you on that, and put the ends of the lances in the stirrup straps of two destriers. One of them wanted to take me up into his saddle, but I wouldn't do it. I walked beside you all the way, and sometimes I talked to you, but I don't think you heard me."
She drained the last of the broth.
"Now, I want to ask you a question. When I was washing myself behind the screen, I could hear you and Agia whispering about a note. Later, you were looking for someone in the inn. Will you tell me about that?"
"Why didn't you ask before?"
"Because Agia was with us. If you had found out anything, I didn't want her to hear what it was."
"I'm sure Agia could discover anything I discovered,"
I said.
"I don't know her well, and in fact, I don't feel I know her as well as I know you. But I know her well enough to realize that she's much cleverer than I am."
Dorcas shook her head again.
She's the sort of woman who's good at making puzzles for other people, but not at solving ones she didn't make herself. I think she thinks, I don't know, sidewise, so no one else can follow it. She's the kind of woman people say thinks like a man, but those women don't think like real men at all. In fact, they think less like real men than most women do. They just don't think like women. The way they do think is hard to follow. But that doesn't mean it's clear or deep. I told her about the note and what it said, and mentioned that although it had been destroyed, I had copied it out on the inn's paper and found it to be the same paper and the same ink. So someone wrote it there, she said pensively. Probably one of the inn servants, because he called the ostler by name. But what does it mean? I don't know. I can tell you why it was put where it was. I sat there, on that horn settee, before you sat down. It made me happy, I recall, because you sat beside me. Do you remember if the waiter, he must have carried the note, whether he wrote it or not, put the tray there before I got up to bathe? I can remember everything, I said, except last night. Agius sat in a folding canvas chair. You sat on the couch, that's right, and I sat down beside you. I had been carrying the Avern on the pole as well as my sword, and I laid the Avern flat behind the couch. The kitchen girl came in with water and towels for you. Then she went out and got oil and rags for me. Dorcas said, "We ought to have given her something." I gave her an orichalc to bring the screen. That's probably as much as she's paid for a week. Anyway, you went behind it, and a moment later the host led the waiter in with the tray and wine. That's why I didn't see it then. But the waiter must have known where I was sitting, because there was no place else. So he left it under the tray, hoping I'd see it when I came out. What was the first part again? The woman with you has been here before. Do not trust her. It must have been for me. If it had been for you, it would have distinguished between Agia and me, probably by hair color. And if it had been meant for Agia, it would have been out on the other side of the table, where she would have seen it instead. So you reminded someone of his mother?
Yes.
Once more, there were tears in her eyes. You're not old enough to have had a child who could have written that note.
I don't remember,
she said, and buried her face in the loose folds of the brown mantle.